fundamentals of security, situational awareness, cybersecurity, prevention, and becoming an asset, not a liability, with Luke Holloway. Welcome to the Vital Vedas Show. I'm your host, Dylan Smith. I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner and holistic health educator who mainly on this podcast show brings things about health and consciousness and living in tune with natural law, in tune with universal, absolute cosmic intelligence. So today we definitely have something which is probably the most uncustomary conversation I have had on the Vital Veda podcast show. By uncustomary, I mean our guest, my friend Luke, talks about violence. He swears more than any other guest that I've had on this show. However, the reason why this is relevant, and we recorded this podcast episode and I chose to release it, is because Luke's work and his approach is very aligned with Ayurveda. Actually, it's aligned with natural law and even specifically aligned with the part of the Veda which we call Ayurveda, which is how natural law governs health. And that's because Luke is a big proponent of prevention and expanding awareness. If you apply Luke's teachings with the right mindset and in the right way, that will be playing a big role in your physical, mental health and wellness. So who's this Luke guy? Well, how did I meet him? I'll share with you in the podcast and at the end. But Luke Holloway is the founder of Raw Combat International, an organization dedicated to providing education and training in a holistic approach to preparedness, personal security, self-protection, survival, and martial skills. With Raw Combat International, Luke has developed over 90 branches worldwide and now the Get Street Smart app. Quickly becoming a YouTube hit with US and Japanese audience, Luke's YouTube videos, now at over 120 million views, first gained the attention of martial artists and other industry professionals by sharing his raw approach to both martial arts and survival skills based on door work, which he worked on doors in Australia and Japan, where he spent most of his adult life in the nightlife. This led him into private security, close protection, as he says, for the famous and dangerous, and advisories for first responders like law enforcement, military, national security. These public services are in desperate need of something realistic, logical, practical, functional, and that's exactly what Luke's providing for them. He recognized that you guys don't know what you're doing. You're just doing these practices which are unrealistic. What's realistic? Luke's given it to them. And with over a decade of real-world experience on the streets, having to navigate the politics and drama of the nightlife, as he calls it, in two cultures, Australia and Japan, it has become his mission to educate people in the realities of violence, street crime, and criminal behavior. So for the most uncustomary podcast episode on the Vital Veda Show so far, probably in par with an episode I did number 8 very early on the Vital Veda podcast, UFOs and Sentient Beings with Colonel Leeds III. Not that this episode with Luke is esoteric or anything like that topic, but I hope you can enjoy it with an open mind and an open heart. And a disclaimer, there are swear words, don't take any offense personally, and there are talks about violence. Hope you can enjoy and let me know your feedback. All right, Luke, welcome to the Vital Veda podcast. Stoked to have you. I love the professional mic and everything, the nice setup. And I just want to, first of all, put a bit of a disclaimer that in this episode, you probably will hear swear words and don't take any offense, maybe even a bit of talks about violence. So maybe it's not the right thing for children, maybe. No. I don't know. Any other disclaimers you want to add?
There's a lot of objective truths that'll be brought up, so people who are easily offended, you know what I mean, or sensitive to certain topics and or triggered by certain things, because I'm sure that violence and crime will come up a lot as we talk a lot about anti-scamming and these sort of things, especially trends in current cybercrime, which we just consider crime anyway. But I was actually dealing with that late last night, early this morning in a consultation, so... Yeah, there's a lot of things that we'll go over, but I'm just saying, if it's not really suitable for children is what I'm saying, for little ears, you know what I mean? They might interpret things, they may repeat things at school. So I'm just saying it's best to, yeah, just be considerate of that.
Yeah, appreciate that. And, you know, we're not going to also put too much effort into trying to be, I guess, tread lightly in terms of language and in terms of what's politically correct and not. So take everything with a grain of salt and have awareness to how things can be interpreted, as Luke said, you know, subjectively.
It's up to you how you take it.
Yeah. And the first question we ask every guest is, what did you do this morning? Or what's your typical daily routine? Because in Ayurvedic medicine, that's a big thing. So I want to ask, for you, what do you enjoy to do as your rituals?
I talk about that a lot, actually, needing that ritual, you know, because I wake up and I need to stretch. I need to do my yoga. I need to play and dance. And when I say dance, I'll usually grab a tool. Whatever it is, it might be an impact tool or a tomahawk or a machete, or you see all that stuff all over my social, I'm sure. You know, I'm just playing around. But it's important to wake yourself up like that and get motivated, you know what I mean, and set yourself on the right trajectory. So I talk about a lot my medicinal cannabis, because a scar on my head with everything there, with the accident, the different brain tumors I've had and all these sort of things. It just helps set me on the right path. I also smash this just as we were starting. This is, what's this, reishi mushroom and lion's mane in that particular one. And I also do Siberian ginseng and astragalus in the morning with some coffee after I've stretched. So it's a bit of wake and bake, stretching, dancing, playing around, having the supplements, having the coffee. And then, you know, it sounds like fuckery, but it's my time. You know what I mean? It's what I want to do. That's what's important, because if you've got so much to handle and so much to juggle and so much to deal with, I really feel like if you get those things out of the way that you know you need to do as well, wake up, stretch, exercise, feel good for starters, you're going to attack the day a lot better, a lot more efficiently. You're going to be clearer. You're going to be more motivated and enthusiastic, and it won't be building in you that, like, fuck, I haven't got to do what I want to do. You know what I mean? Like, I've got so many things that I got to do. But what about the shit that I want to do? So I kind of, for me, I do make that a priority, because otherwise I believe it's not really managing your stress. And that's where, you know, depression and anxiety and all these other sort of mental health issues can really take over. So, yeah.
And you're a good example of that, because you've got a pretty full on business and work, particularly dealing with all different countries and communicating and teaching. I want to talk about how you got to where you are, but just how about just now? Like, you have this Get Street Smart app, and you have this Raw Combat International Institute. Mm-hmm. What is it that you're currently running, I guess?
Yeah. So in the last, was it 12? We started in 2008 with that. Long story boring was, I got really sick of martial politics, and I'd been working doors for quite some time, and running my own crew.
And working doors means... people don't know that slang.
sorry. The nightlife, it's bouncing. And then I got into close protection, and then I got into advisory, which I was even doing last night. Yes, on a personal level, meaning that it's like civilian, the average Joe, the average Jane, whatever. Last night was just one of those. And a lot of corporate gigs, like I might be working with a law firm, or I might be working with a city hall, or through to government departments, which we work with a lot of, not just security, but law enforcement and first responders. So a division of my organization, RTC, is all really geared towards first responders. Every one of our staff is former law enforcement or government agency employee. So we have really come together to put together our, I would say, methods, to put it easily, of risk management, threat management, and crisis management. And it's in those three phases. And that's what I always talk about, you know. There's mindset, skill set, tool set that'll get you through all those things. But it's really looking objectively at your preventative measures, your countermeasures, and your response measures to any of the unwanted scenarios or situations or circumstances. You know, what are we trying to avoid and prevent here? How are we responding to this when it happens? Not just reacting, not emotionally going, oh, and panicking and freezing and hesitating, because you're done then. You can't move. You can't do anything, right? And then recovery measures. For us, for example, earthquakes are a massive thing in Japan. So, you know, I've had to leave once because of that, because of the nuclear reactor and everything. And then there's been floods, and I'm sure you're more than familiar with all that as well, and bushfires and all the other things that we're dealing with in the last decade, which I think has become a reality for people, has also drawn a lot of people towards we do on a personal level. However, on a government level, because I've actually, one of my companies in the States is just dealing mainly with government agencies, as I said, I've certified trainers in our system, our style, our methodologies in, fuck, I don't know how many states. In Japan alone, I think I counted last night 6 or 7 prefectures of cops that have certified, and military all over the place. You know, there's different law enforcement groups I work with. Like you get these sort of little memorabilia and stuff. Like I got all this stuff sort of just sitting around. This is from Japanese Special Forces Group, actually. These are counter-terrorist guys, because I certified a bunch of their sergeants and other higher ranking people who are in charge of the martial arts program for being trainers of what we do, basically. Because again, it's simple, it's practical, it's realistic, it's logical, and it's all bullshit aside. It's an objective look at what are we doing before, during, and after. That's what I was saying. Like if you're looking at preventative measures, countermeasures, and response measures, that's all it is. So again, and I'm going off on tangents here and I apologize, but to get back to the original point was, how do we get here? From working the nightlife and being drawn into that, firstly in Australia, but then in Japan for most of my 20s and 30s, as I think you know, I started to see similarities. And because I sort of gained a lot of traction for what I was doing in the martial sense, because I was also out there saying what I want and doing what I want and going, well, you know, on the door, we have to do it like this. If I'm going to smack someone, I'm going to do it like that. I'm going to hit them while they're talking. I'm going to distract them. I'm going to headbutt them and grab them and bite them and fucking use that counter and bounce their head off the whatever. And talk through situations that I'm actually dealing with very regularly on the door and in clubs and pubs and bars and live events and then close protection gigs that I fell into, sort of working with different DJs and models and then people that would sort of notice me and realize that they've become a target. And that's the issue. You know, we're all really good at being reactive. You know, everyone will come and listen to this, what I'm talking about on my show about fucking, you know, personal security, self-protection and self-reliance, but it's usually because they've been targeted, they've been stalked, they've been attacked, they've been harassed, they've been whatever, right? We don't often look at our health or our capabilities, our skill sets, you know, all those capability gaps until we have a rude awakening and we realize them because something's happened, you know? So I've been very vocal about that for the last, I don't know, decade and a half, whatever it's been. And that's caught a lot of attention, you know, not just within the martial arts community, but with people. It's funny, one of my guys, I had a couple of patches and medallions and shit just here because I'm in my office, right? There before, and I can't pull it up because their job description was doing bad things to bad people. And, you know, I wrote their program for their knife work and their tomahawk. And I just am a gap filler, you know what I mean? I'll get a request from a department saying, like, we have an issue with weapon retention because everything that we've done thus far has been based on Aikido or whatever, and it looks like what you're doing is really practical because it's all about protecting your personal space and having spatial awareness, situational awareness, but above all, self-awareness. Do you know what I mean? The situation you got yourself in, you fucking got yourself in, so no one's going to pull your ass out. It's up to you and you alone to get yourself out of this shit. And it's being aware of not just the situation and how it can affect you, but how you can affect the situation too. What can I do to pull myself out of this shit? You know what I mean? If I have to fight my way home, and I have to fight my way through these fuckers, I'm going to look at attacking them. I am not looking at, oh, if he grabs me like this or he does that or fuck all that. If I have to raise my hands, you're going to be my victim. Is the mentality that you kind of have to switch that predator-prey type of relationship there. If they're looking at you as prey because they're a predator and I say, well, you're going to have to attack this guy. It's like if someone's entering wherever I'm at and trying to impose their will on me, my family or whatever, I'm going to fucking hunt you. You bet you, as sure as your ass points to the ground, I'm going to fucking hunt you. I'm not going to sit there and wait till, oh, if he grabs me like this, I remember this move and that. You're in my fucking domain. And that doesn't matter where that is. If that's even in my personal space, I'm going to do what I have to do. Now, don't get me wrong. There's preventative measures to avoid that, isn't there? There's deterrence that you might have around your house, your business, your workplace, your whatever. And there's also the communication skills. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of things that we can do preventatively. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when it's do or die. I'm talking about when one of you gets to fucking leave. And it's whether or not you can make that decision that you have that sense of self-worth and going, well, it's not going to be me today, cunt. I'm going to get home and I'm going to see my fucking family and you're not going to stop that. And I apologize to anyone listening. I do get quite aggressive and assertive.
Oh, good.
I bring these things up because you got to be. And when I'm talking to ladies and I say, and they're going, I can see them. And I think you saw this as well in one of the female participants that was there when we were outside of Gosford. They get a little bit like lacking in confidence. And I say, okay, I completely understand. You won't have the confidence to maybe put a hand on a guy my size, right? 6'5", 265 pounds, 115 kilos or whatever. You know, is that really something you're going to do? No. But what if you're with someone that you care about? What if you're with your kid or your elderly mother or whatever, and I'm some meffed out, you know, street guy that's just come up and started slapping them and trying to do whatever. Think of the worst case scenario, that I'm trying to impose my will or threaten, intimidate or harass or whatever your loved one. What the fuck are you going to do about it then, is the question. Because you're going to think that to yourself. When something kicks off that you can't handle, you know, when the shit gets thick real quick, as we say, you're going to go through that thought process like, what the fuck? Really? Are you serious? What do I do? Now, everyone does that. You know, whether it's a car crash in front of you or whether it's whatever sort of accident or an act of violence that you weren't expecting, or it's out of the norm and it catches you off guard, you're going to be like, what the fuck? Really? Like, serious? Okay, what do I do? And that usually takes people a good few seconds. So everything that we do has to be with under 2 seconds, based on some other sports science I can go into later if you want. But again, it's about shortening that response time so that you're not just reacting to things, you're responding to them and acting so that you're mitigating that threat so it doesn't develop into a crisis. And of course, everything is much, much better off being preventative, as in proactive, and that's why you won't hear me talk about self-defense, because you're defending yourself. If you're doing that, you're already a victim, and this is anti-victim training. So yeah, that might talk a bit about.
it's good, because in Ayurvedic medicine, the number one goal, you can say, is to prevent. Is to maintain health in the healthy. And the second thing is to then treat the disease. And of course, it applies as well to, and I just want to say, like, so people like Dylan, how the hell did you land up with this guy on your show? Well, I went to a survival weekend with, it was on survival, and it was just one of my favorite teachers of bush medicine and bush food. And there was this other guy joining, Luke Holloway, and I didn't really know, like, I didn't even read your bio, Luke. Like, I just went for Jake. Wow, yeah, this guy's got some good points and made me think about stuff that I haven't thought about before, and really changed my own awareness. Because in the Ayurveda and in the Vedic system, we talk about awareness. It's about expanding your awareness, say cosmic awareness, subtle awareness. But also, we have to not just be up in the clouds in their space. Like, we have to be realistic and be on the relative and expand our awareness there. And look, the reality is there are dark energies, there are dark forces, there are crazy people, there are people who commit dark things. So 100%. It is just expanding that awareness in a way where it's not causing you anxiety or stressing you out. And perhaps that's a huge topic, and I think it's probably something that you're also will continue to find balance with.
100%.
But yeah, so back to you. I want to hear about, like, you mentioned Japan, like your home is Japan. Mm-hmm. So tell us how you got into this, because you've got full tattoo, you speak fluent Japanese,
we don't speak English at home.
Yeah, beautiful. And like, you can tell from what you just mentioned and from what I've heard, you kind of caused, like, I don't know if it's a revolution or just an evolution in the martial arts scene of just like slapping them in the face, like, come on, guys, like, you're not even considering the fundamental thing, and you got to expand awareness, essentially. Don't be so rigid into your one tradition. So yeah, how did you get to where you are today, having a successful company of, what do you have, like 96 schools or something around the world?
Yeah, branches, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Mm. So, I'd say 20-odd locations in Japan now, and a lot of them aren't actually open to the public. Like I said before, there's, I think, 6 or 7 prefectures that I've certified cops in that only give it to their department, because any government employee there can't have a second job or charge money. That's one thing.
And what are these? Are these like dojos? Are they gyms? Or like, what do you do at these departments or locations?
Sometimes they are, but sometimes they're just a location. So a lot of the time with a department, usually, let's say it's a police or a military department, yeah, they usually have their own renshujo or dojo, or, you know, the police train kendo and judo mandatorily. They have to do that, but they've also been looking at a lot of other things. And because the biggest thing in Japan is politics, right? And I can talk about that from the nightlife. I can talk about that from actual politicians, because I have worked with a number of them. I can say, but I have to be vague, as I said to you before, about some things. Firstly, because I don't want to insinuate and I don't want to incriminate. You know what I mean? If someone thinks that I'm talking about someone specifically and I'm talking about a situation, then it will incriminate them. It could incriminate me, and it could. And I never want to insinuate that someone was trying to do something they weren't. And that goes for me too. I'm not trying to sound like a badass here, but there's been some really serious situations on a business level, on a personal level, in terms of incidences that I've been involved in. And yeah, it's you can let it scar you, or you can let it remind you. And that's what my ink's about. It's never usually out. You know, I don't walk around with my ink out where I live in Japan or in Australia. I'm always usually long sleeved, and that's for reasons of being ID'd. I don't want to be ID'd for one, and it's actually illegal in Japan. So, you know, I talk to my, what do you call, tattoo artist about all that. And it's, you know, the fight that she's been going through. She was actually in the movie The Outsider, which I did a little bit of. It's a show on Netflix about Japanese organized crime and how a white guy steps in, just like The Last Samurai. You know, of course it has to be a white American, but anyway, the director and was it producer came and sat down one time when I was getting my back, I think it was my back being done. Anyway, she often calls me and says, you know, can you translate? I've got someone coming along that's, you know, from America, or we've had people from New York Post and all these sorts of places. I think it was Post or Wall Street, whatever it was, you know, they do pieces on her, different documentaries and stuff. So I'm like, all right. And I start, translating for her, but she doesn't know you. She'll play it down or just be really like bland, like really sort of cold, so to speak. And so I fill in some gaps for them about the nightlife and how things actually work, but then when you see the end product, it's typical Hollywood fuckery, you know what I mean? I was just giggling most of the time. My missus is just like, oh, this is really bad, this makes Japanese people look, you know, bad to Westerners. And I said, that's the thing, man. You know, like if we watch anything on Netflix or whatever about Japan, it's often really disappointing because it shows the crazy side or the weird side or the, you know what I mean? And it's not all about that, man. Like you don't, yeah, I don't know. I don't hang out downtown anymore in downtown Tokyo. I do advisory down there for security groups and police and military as well. But I was just working with a group last night actually on some things as well, because I'm going back next month, as I was saying. Where did I get at with that? Yeah, my first book that I put out there, Nibyoi no Itaus, is like to drop them in 2 seconds is the title. And I didn't decide that, the fucking editors decided that shit, you know, because they're like, it's got to sell. I'm like, it'll sell. You got a big white fella smacking people on the front, fuck's sake, you know, talking about and squashing heads and protecting people and all this sort of stuff. And it, you know, I got called into a lot of places that you just would not have access to. On a government level, on a entertainment level, I'll say, and people who are just really connected to everyone. It's crazy when you start talking to people at that sort of level, let's say, everyone is connected. It's really weird. It's weird, man. Like the influence, like when I talk about politics or people talk about politics and in the nightlife, you know, it's usually to do with territory as in drugs or protection money or whatever they got going, they're running girls or whatever. It's usually becomes a factor of territory, like they become territorial. But politics is really influence and power. Do you know what I mean? That's what it is, having that influence over someone. So I can manipulate you, and I don't look at the term manipulation as a bad thing. Manipulation is a positive thing. You'll manipulate your environment to survive. Do you know what I mean? Like I'll manipulate this environment to fucking get out of here if I have to. I'll manipulate you to sit you where I want you, or to have you standing where I want so that I can see all the exits, so my back's to the wall and all those typical things you hear about that are a thing. Sure. But manipulation doesn't have to be a negative thing. It's often a positive thing. However, the point being is manipulation, we talk about it from the victim's perspective. If they've had someone impose their will on them, for example, or make them do something, that manipulation becomes a form of obviously control through intimidation, meaning that person, the victim, will fear the possible outcome, you know, if they don't do something or if they don't create a certain situation, circumstance, or you know, give the predator what they want, you know. So we talk about violence from this a lot of the time because, you know, violence, much like respect, becomes a currency. And I talk about that on a upcoming project I'm doing with one of my guys who's been in the US government for some time. And we work with first responders, as I was saying. And I was like, look, in the nightlife, it's respect is one thing. Like I'll give every one of you, I'll give you a dollar of respect. Think of it like that. You know what I mean? I don't care who you are. I don't care what the fuck you got. I don't care whether you're picking up garbage or you're, you know what I mean? You're working the door or you own the place. I'm going to talk to you the same. I'm going to look you in the eye. I'm going to shake your hand. I'm going to say, how the fuck are you? Because I'm going to give you that respect. It's common decency as I see it. There's different forms of that in Japan, but me is who I am, and everyone on the street knows who I am anyway. I walk down there. It's a bit, you know, when I take a crew with me, like for the last show we did, which we're actually back in post-production for, they were kind of like, fuck, you weren't kidding. Like it's how would they not know me? I used to run things there in, you know, I used to run three clubs there and here and there work for a number of other places. Cause it was easier to call me than let's say influential people that will cost you. They will cost you the repercussion of other customers or whatever you want to call them, patrons being scared. Do you know what I mean? So if I can go in there and be diplomatic and talk my way through a situation and manipulate someone, you know, persuade them to do what they need to do, then it's often going to be easier if I do that than a group of other guys. Do you know what I mean? That's going to be an issue. But if you're in that role, you got to accept that it could go either way and you've got to be willing to do that. Do you know what I mean? So we often, people have moral boundaries or things that they wouldn't be willing to do to someone else. You know, a lot of people wouldn't be willing to put hands on someone and impose their will on someone. And I talk about that being a positive thing because, again, what if someone put hands on your kid? What if someone put hands on your missus? Or if you're a lady, what if someone put hands on your elderly mother or grandmother or whatever? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Do you know what I mean? And until that shit happens to people, they don't actually think about it a lot of the time and go, what the fuck would I do? And we call that mental rehearsal training. It's MRT. We just think about those situations, go, okay, you're in situation A. Maybe you're sitting there on the train, or the train's not a big thing in Australia. It's you're in your car. You know what I mean? And you're approached by a guy. He puts his hand through the window and grabs you by the neck and sticks a knife to your eye and says, give me your fucking phone. What are you going to do? You're going to give him your fucking phone. Now you've just lost your fucking phone, right? Okay, what do we do about that? Well, the issue is your phone was open at the time because you were talking on it or whatever, and now that guy's got into absolutely everything. Do you know what I mean? And the issue these days is, you know, I'll just relate back to the situation last night in a second, but we got to look at how we could avoid and prevent that. Well, did you have enough space between you and the car in front of you, for example? Did you have your window up? Did you create those deterrents in terms of like looking around and being aware of your situation, your immediate sort of environment, and seeing this sketchy looking fucker and going, you know what, if he comes any closer, I'm going to start beeping my horn and saying, get back, fuck off, or whatever it is. Because you can tell by the look of a guy, if he's fixated on you and he's approaching you, it's what do you think is going to hand you a fucking brochure about Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons or Christian or whatever, you know what I mean? Like offer you some sort of invitation to his church. No, he definitely doesn't look like that type. So, you know, you got to start thinking about, well, what are my options here? What can I do to better my position? It should be about gaining and maintaining a position of advantage. And there are things you can do if you think about it, if you give yourself the opportunity to at least walk yourself through those situations mentally, right? And then, yeah, can you escape if you had to fight? How can I stop myself from fighting? Wind the window up. The last course we did was in Bellow, and one of the guys locked himself out of his car. And I said, and he's like, oh, I'll have to get through the window. I said, okay, use this tomahawk and go at the corner, and it's going to be harder to get through than you think. And he's like, oh, I thought maybe I could just punch through it or whatever. I said, nah, man, you won't punch through that thing. It'll take you a good few goes to get through that. So your window is a lot stronger than you'd think. And even that couple of seconds, you know, lights could change or you could be, you know, steering off and getting out and whatever. But just drawing attention to yourself, like beeping the horn and screaming and even turning your phone, your camera on and going, I've got you on video, fuck off. Do you know what I mean? You're on live Instagram feed or whatever it is right now. Someone call the police for me. I would call the police first anyway if you feel threatened. But the point is, a lot of the time they're not going to come because they're under-resourced. So, you know, again, situational awareness is one thing, is understanding that normal is a fluid thing, as they say. You know, it's like that changes so much, and what someone else considers normal is not what you'd consider normal. Put it this way, if you look at things like the documentary The Real Bling Ring, I don't know if you've seen that on Netflix, but it's a doco about some really spoiled and entitled kids who were obsessed with celebrity. And what they did was they stalked these celebrities online and they show you how they did it. They all laugh about it, they are joking about it, and you've got these people like Orlando Bloom and what was that chick? She made the adult film, I can't remember, Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan. They broke into these people's places and just ransacked them and did it repetitively because they said they're just leaving the doors unlocked. They're just leaving a key under the mat. They're just doing, and that's a big thing I talk about too, home security. Obviously, I teach a lot about that. But one of the first most important things is InfoSec. You know, InfoSec is your information security. So you don't need to promote to the world where you're going to be, the fact that you're not going to be home, the fact that, you know, All these things. I won't go on about it too much, but
oh, that's so big, and that's like one of the biggest things I took home. Not that I did it much, but like for other people, I'm like, how silly, live Instagram story, flying to Japan now, or going to Melbourne now, and like, oh, sweet. And like these days, a lot of people follow a lot of people, and particularly if you're someone who does have more people following, like the chances of having a guy with someone with a dark energy or dark intentions. Well, great. I know where he lives because I see he posts what his house looks like or whatever. All this, it's crazy. And a big thing from which you said is like no live posts. Huge thing.
It's hard because you can't control those. And to go about, just to talk about InfoSec for a second, people often, especially if you're trained to look for it, it's easy. Do you know what I mean? Putting the pieces of the puzzle together. So for example, people put up photos of, the biggest one for females that I hear is where they go to the gym. They check in and then they wonder why they've got stalkers. They wonder why guys are waiting for them in the female toilets or in the car park or at their car or even followed them home. Because guys who are motivated will do it gradually. It's more about the hunt than the kill. Do you know what I mean? It's like when you're tuning a chick, for example, it's more about, oh, is this, has it, it's the anticipation. It's more in the hunt than it is the kill. You talk to any real hunter and they'll tell you that as well. It's in the stalk. It's in the everything sort of revolving around that. So what I'm getting at is guys don't mind observing you a few times and then maybe seeing what car you get into and then maybe following you for a block one time. And then the next day it progresses and it escalates in that way a lot of the time. But I had a lot of, still do have a lot of females say to me like, yeah, they get stalked from the gym. A lot of the time it could even be online. I got an example I might've shared with you in Gosford. You know, we were at a waterfall on the Sunshine Coast and this lady was acting like an absolute asshole, just carrying on and just being really rude and just, she's smoking. And I was like, hey, there's a lot of kids around here. Would you mind maybe doing that up there? Cause it was just right where everyone was trying to hang out at this waterfall. It was just imposing it on everyone. I just thought, this is fucked. So I said something politely and she was basically like, well, hold this, you know what I mean? Like, fuck you sort of thing. And I was like, all right. And I saw that she was there for the reason that a lot of these other young ladies were too, basically the selfies and something for the gram, you know? Oh, fuck's sake. And I said to my daughter, I said, check this shit out. I said, give it an hour and I'll be able to paint a picture on her. And she's like, what do you mean? I said, watch this. After we got home, I went onto the gram. I looked up that place, a couple of hashtags, and I saw this lady's profile, which was public. She'd posted where she goes to the gym, photos of her kids, what school they go to. She had her work uniform in one, because it had a little title of where she works at, and then another one had a name tag. She had her car and different things. Like, if I was a bad guy, think about it. If I was a guy that just hated women for whatever reason, maybe I was, you know, abandoned by my mother and I had this really, you know, horrible drug habit that I went through. And I know people like this. I know people that have come out of that. And I know people that have gone down a one-way street. I know a guy that just topped himself. I know I had an extended family member that went through that and just died not that long ago as well. So I've seen that road and what that can do to people, turn very decent, hardworking, smart people into just shells of them former selves, you know, like zombies, man. So you can't predict what someone else is willing to do to you is the point, you know? So yeah, I see that a lot. And a lot of the time people don't consider their privacy and the fact that people are on a need to know basis or should be on a need to know basis. Why the fuck does anyone need to know where your kid goes to school or where they train or where you train or wherever, whatever? The people do not need to know. At the very least, privatize your shit is what I say to people, you know, like privatize it. Don't have it open to the public and just be considerate of, okay, this is the simplest way I can put it, right? If someone was motivated, what could they do with the information that you've put out there thus far? If you look through your own feed, if you look through your own, let's say, social media, whatever it is, doesn't matter, and someone was motivated, what could they do to you? Because the majority of the situations that I step into in a consultation role, meaning close protection and or security advisory, a lot of the time, well, I will say this, I would say 99% of the time, it is a relationship that's gone bad. It could be a business deal. It could be last night it was a stalker. The ex-husband was a stalker and the lady had said, you know, she's been talking about she's been tracked basically by the ex-husband. This isn't that uncommon actually. But the point is that the trackers couldn't be found. So my colleague said to me, what can I do? What's the next thing? And I said, well, let's go through her cybersecurity protocols. I said, she needs to use a different email address for different accounts. We need to separate her digital assets. You know, we've got bank accounts, social media accounts, emails, devices, all these things. I said, you need to tie that shit up with a password manager for starters, multiple email accounts so that the ex who probably does have access to one of her accounts. I said, I'll tell you right now, I know that a lot of people don't like Apple, but a lot of people use it. And this goes for whatever, it doesn't matter what device you use, but when your device gets updated, there's often a lot of changes in settings. So one of the recent trends that we see in crime that actually started in the UK and is making its way around the world is that a preview of the notification will come up when you're sent a message, a text message. So the issue with that is that if your phone gets stolen and they know your phone number, or, you know, they get that, they're trying to get a code sent for your bank account, for access to your bank account, and they've got your phone, basically they can get a preview of that sent. So even if they can't get into your phone if it's still locked. They can get the preview of that code and still get that code to access that. And it's just, like I said before, putting all those pieces of the puzzle together. If you've got one piece, you often know where to look for the next one or what the general picture is looking like. So I was talking about this last night and I said, you know, think about all the digital assets, separating the access to those so that, for example, if a hacker, and it doesn't have to be a hacker, it could just be someone who's motivated, as I said, because it's really fucking easy to do these things. And as I said, if someone just got access to your phone while you were asleep or your desktop, your laptop, whatever it is so easy for them to give themselves access. They don't need to be a computer whiz or an IT geek or what. It doesn't matter. The biggest or what I'll say weakest link in security is the human element. So for example, I could give you whatever asset. I had talked about this when we met in Gosford, and please remind me to get back to the cyber thing because there's a way that the guy stalked that lady, which I think happened and can be avoided and prevented. But the point is that I talked about this when we were in Gosford, and I had a guy who's in Australia and he's a licensed gun owner and everything, right? And he was putting all these photos and videos of him going shooting with all these new guns and stuff like that. And he also was posting, oh, I just brought this new property. It's out here, la, la, la. It's about half an hour away. And then, you know, I'm moving today and all this sort of thing. What do you think happened? The last thing that people usually move is their gun safe. So by the time he got home on that day of big moving, his shit had been tied up with a chain and pulled out through the front door by a truck. And he was really worried about it. He was telling me at the time, he's like, oh, I've got to go to court. I said, good. And I hope you lose your fucking license. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, you deserve that, man. You really do. I said, it is your legal duty and obligation. You have a duty of care to your fucking family, for starters, to protect that. And first of all, InfoSec is everything. Information security is everything. You're putting a fucking massive target on your front door if you go and advertise such things. So call me paranoid, but I call it prepared, you know, because I've seen and been involved in far too many cases of simple relationships that have turned sour, that have gone from, you know, a bit of back and forth to harassment and then stalking. And then, man, I've worked with abduction cases. I've worked with victims of just about every sort of crime you can imagine.
Yeah. And it is like, it's a fundamental psychology, or I guess self fulfillment within people that's lacking, that's causing them to share. Like it's mm-hmm. that dopamine hit. Need to share. Give me a like on Instagram. Give me these things. That's really one of the fundamental problems that need to be rectified. And of course, I'll just, like, I feel it as well. Like, I'm not perfect. I've, you know, Instagram is a big thing for our business. But
of course,
I think one of the solutions is just to take those measures and stop doing that. Like, that helps you and liberates you. And I've seen it with patients as well who are addicted to social media. I've dealt with kids and people who are getting mentally affected by social media, and just stopping it, whether at first it's like a drug, you'll cause you, but eventually you'll begin to feel liberated and you'll be safe in the same time in terms of InfoSec. I think that's such a big thing. And I think it's really important in, for example, this audience, Vital Veda podcast, like especially for the women, for the good looking woman, for the young woman, like, and I know you deal with like women and all models and I think all you did a TV show with helping heaps of models and stuff. Like you were telling me about one model who was followed by the gym. Like, of course these models get, I'm friends with models. Like they do get stalked and they have a lot of shit. So all it takes is just a bit of, well, it just takes a guy. Already the info's there. It's just going to take the wrong guide and then something's going to happen. Well, it may happen.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to victim blame here, but if you look at the motivations that you've given them, you've really got to try and balance that out with some deterrence. And that can even be by way of your personality and how you interact with things. Just making a slight adjustment will make a huge difference. You know what I mean? It is really how you interact with people, because if someone is firstly approaching you in that way that they're fixated on you and you feel intimidated and threatened, if it's the same, man. If you see something, say something. You'll never be wrong. That's the thing. Your gut is never wrong. If you feel off, you need to listen to that and go, hey, I need to do something here. Because as I said before, situational awareness is understanding the situation and the effect it can have on you, but also the effect that you can have on the situation. So what am I going to do about this? And again, for any of the females listening who are worried about this sort of thing, at least walk yourself through those paces. Obviously, have a listen to what I'm talking about over here as well. Please, by all means, share the link or whatever. We go through specific courses in that. We've put them out for free for situational awareness and spatial awareness and self-awareness and communication and improvisation and adaptability to situations, all that stuff, right? But I'm just saying, if you haven't yet made the time, which I hope you'll be proactive and actually do, but if you haven't actually made the time or can't see yourself doing that just yet, walk yourself through any unwanted circumstance or situation mentally and think, okay, how could I avoid and prevent that? What am I going to do at this point in the situation? What trajectory is that going to put me on? For example, just ask yourself those questions, give yourself that time. Going back to your point before about social media, that is training us to be the exact opposite of self-aware or situationally aware. Because for starters, we're here, you know, in the device like this. And we are training our brains to be reset every, it used to be 20 seconds. You know, a few years ago, they said, oh, the average attention span is no longer than 20 seconds. Lately, they've said it's less than 4. And it's true, man, because if you talk about something we were going to do a week or two ago, right? Most people will be like, oh, did we? What was a lot of people are losing like their short-term memory. Do you know what I mean? That's definitely a thing. Because the other thing that, how I think this is all connected, I listened to a lot of psychologists. I've actually just did an episode with one, and we're redoing it on Friday. And she was there. She was actually at the course that you're at. Actually, Rebecca, she's a psychologist. Awesome. Been having some great conversations. But what was the point of this? I listened to a lot of the things that they talk about, because Buddhism, for me, is just like Eastern psychology. So we talk about the three great teachings, right? The Taoism, Buddhism, and Confucianism. That's what holds society together in Japan. And Korea in a big way, big, big way in South Korea and probably North Korea, but I can't comment on that. The point being is that it's all about manners. It's all about your place in society and all the rest. And the point for that to that was the objective truths, like just looking at things really, really objectively. And yeah, just understanding what you can do about situations. You know, what options do you have? What are your objectives? What are your options? Okay, what are your priorities? And if you can remember that, you'll have go-to sayings, go-to moves, and go-to exits. And I share that with my girls. I share that with my family. I share that with everyone I work with. You need to know and understand your go-to moves. So what are you going to do? Someone gets in your face. Oh, I'm going to shove him and I'm going to run. I'm going to smack him in the throat. I'm going to run. I'm going to, you know, flick him in the eyes and run. Whatever. But don't think that your martial arts move, your 27-step wrist lock or whatever that works great in the dojo, even on big guys because you've got a black belt or whatever, don't think because that works in the dojo, it's going to work on a guy like me, my size, who's pissed off and motivated and trying to punch your fucking head in. How do you feel about it now? Do you know what I mean? Because even just talking like that, people go, that makes me feel uncomfortable. Good, because I'm going to teach you how to thrive outside your comfort zone. If all you ever do is sit in your little fucking lunchbox world in your comfort zone and go, oh, no, it's all peace, love, and mung beans. That's the biggest thing Steve said to me that on the last gig I had in Bello, as I was saying. He's like, fuck me. He's a spiritual guidance and he teaches meditation, all these things. And I just love it because it's very, very much in line with my own Taoist and Buddhist studies and beliefs, right? So I'm like, yeah, this is fucking awesome. So having great conversations and he goes, but what I love about what you do is it brings that sense of reality and tells us like, hey, we need balance. And that's exactly what I'm saying. Tai Chi is my main martial art. I've done it for over 20 years and I'm a shooter and I'm a hunter and I'm doing all these other things too. Sure. But it's about balance, man. You know what I mean? Like you can preach peace, love, and mung beans, and I'm all about it. Trust me, my ink has meanings. It's not for fashion. It's all about balance. Look, the blue and the red, for example, that's one thing. The tiger and dragon on my tits, that's another thing. You know, like it's all about balance, and I'm all about it, man. But if we're going to talk about violence and crime, then let's be objective. Let's be objective and go, okay, yeah, this shit is fucked up. But what are we going to do about it? Do you know what I mean? Because as I said before, if you sit there and freeze, panic, and hesitate, you've already lost. And I use that term loosely because I don't consider winning or losing. It's whether or not you can get home safe. And that's when the situation is over. So again, if you learn some little move in martial arts, which I've done for more than 30 years, and I've got multiple master ranks in fucking several of them, I'll list them for you if you want. You can put them there. I'm just not interested in bragging or talking about tangents of martial arts right now because the point is that that's self-perfection. We're talking about self-protection. Self-perfection is what I do in the morning. I stretch, I breathe, I relax, I get myself. Do you know what I mean? That's a very different mindset and realm compared to when I might have to fight someone off my loved one or whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? The point is that there's time and place and relevancy. So self-perfection and self-protection are two very different things. And I think that that's where I got the most traction because I've been saying that from day one. I said, hey, man, like this is great. And I'm a fucking martial arts nerd for sure. But when it comes to dealing with people who are aggressive, intimidating, violent, trying to impose their will on you, whatever it is, trying to scam you, there's no room for talking about, you know, the wall way factor or the fucking whatever, you know, whatever it is, you know, there's just no time for that.
Practical.
But yeah, without being practical rude, reality. Like this, any other style or art or anything else, it's just saying, if you want to do this, we have to look at it this way. And that's.
Yeah. I think a big thing which I reckon listeners are feeling and what I felt initially and what I still feel to some extent is that balance of how much do I do this practice? What did you call it? MRT? Is it?
Yep.
Is that what it was?
Mental rehearsal training.
Mental rehearsal training. How much do I go on the Get Street app and do all these techniques and prepare? Because the Vedic view is where attention flows, energy goes.
The energy goes.
So if I'm going to think, if I'm thinking about all the time, what am I going to do if someone does this? What am I going to do? You'll probably, like the Vedic view is you'll probably attract it.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a fine balance. And that's kind of what I remember when we first met. I was like, I kind of take the approach to not get myself into these situations by not thinking about it, which has validity, but also has that unrealistic, you know, shit can happen. So I just want to share that. And I want to then, after the weekend with you, I came back home and I like told all my work colleagues, I told my wife, like all these new things, particularly with home security and cybersecurity, I took a lot on. And then I was telling people about the story that your daughter was talking about. And sorry to mention your daughter if I
oh, don't mind. Go for it. No, but by all means, go for it.
It was you and your daughter were sharing about how you on the way to Coffs Harbour, on the way to Central Coast, which you came for the workshop, drove down the coast, how you stopped at some eatery. I can't remember. You stopped for some food. And your daughter knew that you have to sit on that side of the table because you have to see the exit.
Of course.
Right? And you have to, can you just for this example, can you add other things that you would consider when going, for example, going out on the side of the road, you're stopping at Oliver's Real Foods, for example, for lunch?
For sure.
What's in your awareness?
I'll break that down for you and remind me to get back to MRT and getting a balance of paranoia and preparedness as well. If you want to just remind me of that in a minute, because I can speak to that and help people find balance. Because it comes back to having resolve and then being calm because you know that you have options, being confident and capable. That's how you maintain balance. And I'll tie that into what I'm about to speak about too. If you have a plan, you feel better, right? So you asked me about my daily ritual in the beginning. Well, I have so many whiteboards around me. I've got one right there that has a list of priorities and objectives for the day. Objectives and then priorities. It goes in a list of priorities. But it's the same when I go somewhere so that I'm setting myself up for success rather than struggle. I'm in the position of advantage, never disadvantage. And yeah, my girls know that. Anyone I'm with, I know that. And I'm only going to sit in a place where I might usually feel like I couldn't even eat, like I'd be that sort of like just, you know, doing these. It's gotten better, I'd say, having not doing close protection work recently, really recently. It's not as high sort of, you know what I mean? I'm not going to call it anxiety. I'm going to call it awareness or alertness. But the last situation I was in was pretty fucking serious. There was an attempt on my client's life at that point, and there was multiple threats and all the rest and weapons involved. And so after situations like that, you're kind of hyper alert. What I mean? You're like, fuck, you know, did they see us coming in here or whatever? Because you don't know who's who, man. You don't know who's connected and whatever it may be. But that specific situation is, I want to be able to see the exits. I want to be able to see that I've got enough space to move. I don't want to be too close to the exit because, you know, it can get bunched up. It can get crowded. It can become a choke point as well. But just basically a bit of space to move. I want to be able to see all of my options. I want to be able to see everyone as best as I can, the whole place. And generally speaking, with third-party protection, you want to be able to see your VIP, let's call it, your very important person, whoever you're protecting. So it depends on the environment and where we're walking or where we're going through or where we're traveling. I might be in front, especially if I'm high profile because I'm a deterrent and I'm saying, hey, fuck off, get out of the way sort of thing, so to speak. But low profile is usually I want them in front of me so I can see their back. I can see all around them. If it's only me, if it's myself.
So I'm going to go relate this story, to the story now with greater. So I get back from this week. I'm telling all my friends and I tell them about this story about how, look, this guy's great, but he's a bit paranoid is what I think. But he can't even sit. His daughter knows that he has to sit. And then they go, but Dylan, you're like that with Ayurveda. You have to be sitting at the east. When I eat, I'm either facing north or east. When I eat, I have to have the right lights. When I eat, I have to have no screens near me, no electromagnetic fields. The phones have to be from a distance from me. But like, Dylan, you're like that. And I'm like, that's true. For Luke, it's probably not, it's natural. It's not a strain. It's not, this is causing me to feel anxious and paranoid. It's just way of living. It's like me. Like people think, you have to have the door in the north or east of your house. And when you go to the toilet, you have to sit facing either north or south. Like you can't, so it's all these things, but this is natural. And it's And it doesn't, if it is causing strain and anxiety and paranoia, then, well, you got to find that balance. So and that really clicks to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, so that's just his journey and his awareness and he develops that. So it's beautiful. I appreciate it. And I want to also add, we learned, so for the first time, I did martial arts that weekend or whatever you want to call it, self-protection. And it was scenarios like, what if someone's attacking you with a knife, and learned some moves, which was awesome. Like, it wasn't at all inviting that energy. I really enjoyed it. It was fun. I liked the movements. It was like, I was like us at home wanting people to do it again, like, so I could practice those moves. I'm like, it was really, it's cool. And yeah, I think that I'm just trying to bring in an approach to this where you're not allowing that dark energy of violence and crime in.
That's very important. That's very important. I think firstly, it's great that you have people around you that can tell you that and keep you in check, so to speak, because you need that. You know, you got to be an asset to each other. That's the point, not being a liability. Because to your point before, if you're just all peace, love, and mung beans, which again, I love, but if you're just that, then when the shit gets thick real quick and you can't handle it, how are you going to be an asset to your loved ones? How are you going to navigate this situation? How are you going to communicate your way through with this, whoever it is that might have mistaken your identity? Do you know what I mean? The amount of times I was approached, attacked, and whatever on the door, working clubs and whatnot, because they thought I was some other guy, a guy that was there the night before, and they come back and that guy had done something to their cousin or whatever. I had heaps of situations like this. So the point is that there's a lot of reasons you could be attacked. I talk about that, you know, and one could be for no reason at all, just right place, wrong time. You know, or wrong place, right time, depending on how you want to look at it. But the bad guys, so to speak, the easiest way that I can put it, choose the time and place. You don't. So if it, like I said, you can learn all your moves in martial arts and whatever, but especially for females, which I was going to mention before, you know, the point shouldn't be to entangle. You shouldn't be trying to grapple with someone and get entangled. You should be trying to disengage and remove yourself from the situation as soon as fucking possible. And that was probably my main point while we were talking down in Gosford.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the points about paranoia versus preparedness.
Can we just reiterate that? Because I just want to make that more clear. Like what we learned, which I really appreciated, it wasn't so much that physical, I'm in a grapple, I've got a knife. Like it was repelling, it was prevention. It was prevention in that moment of, okay, there's a guy, what's the bit? And it ultimately was, I guess, from my point of view, to sum it up, it was get as much space as you can so that you can run away.
Exactly.
And it was preventing from getting close to the bad guy.
Yeah, 100%. And that's where it should start. You know what I mean? Your self-awareness, your spatial awareness, and then your situational awareness. Those are the fundamental sort of pillars of what I share. And then on my online courses and the app, we start off with personal security and then self-protection. And then if you want to do all the martial arts stuff, sure, by all means, go ahead and do it. It's all there. But I do recommend to people when you're starting out, don't be fixated on that because it's more of a hobby. And you know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, like people will say like, well, how would something like yoga help me in a self-protection situation or a situation of violence or whatever? I said, man, the fact that you can actually move, the fact that you've got mobility, you'll have agility, you'll have coordination for one. You think you're going to be able to fight without coordination and control over your biomechanics, like how you actually move. That's a big thing. That's actually what my next show is about that we're in post-production right now. We worked with the UFC and it was all started by someone I probably shouldn't mention right now, but some very, very, very influential people were involved. And that's how we looked at things, the objective truth of how can I hit harder? How can I hit faster? How can I cause more damage? And again, it's looking at the objective truth. And the way that I actually broke and set the world record at the UFC Performance Institute in Vegas was with my Tai Chi. With mechanics, I hit that thing so fucking hard. I broke all the records, and the show goes on, and there's other things, and we compare people like different fighters, females, and weight, and all these things. So I won't spoil it. But one of the parts was at the UFC Performance Institute, I broke and set the world record. It was formerly set by Joe Rogan, then Mark Hunt, and then some other guys had done other things. But the point was that my Tai Chi got me there. My Tai Chi, because I was actually injured at the time, I was in the worst shape of my life. Working pre-production and then being on the road for however many weeks it was, like it was a couple of months in however many countries, going and seeing all these fighters at all these big gyms, at all the, you know, everywhere is insane. We had the LAPD, we had fucking undercover cops, you know, they brought a bunch of guns and batons. We did all this crazy stuff. It's really cool. It'll be coming out soon. You'll be able to see previews. But the point is that, you know, I had access to all those places and still do because I have respect for people. You know what I mean? It's like I was saying before, I give everyone an ounce, a dollar rather, of respect. And then, you know, if it's always in good circulation, like a currency, we're good. Do you know what I mean? If you go and take the piss and you run with that and you do whatever, you disrespect me and you come back and you want something, it's like, sorry, man, you're in deficit. Do you know what I mean? So I think, first of all, that's a really big thing. And it comes back to self-respect, like respecting yourself. Are you doing things that serve your purpose? You know what I mean? So if you're trying to always optimize, if you're trying to always improve your position, for example, gaining and maintaining the position of advantage, well, you got to look at your mindset, skill set, tool set. And that's my biggest points in my training, in my app and everything that I talk about. Mindset, skill set, tool set. These are the three things that you'll be able to use to optimize your personal security, self-protection, and self-reliance in any sort of situation. You were talking about before the habits. Rather than being paranoid, you want to be prepared. So for yourself, it makes you comfortable to sit in a certain way, to have certain things around you, to be doing certain things. I think we all need a sense of normalcy, you know, like something that we feel is regular or normal to us. So we get comfortable like that. And that's why for you, you need that, right? And I need that too. I need my back to the, I don't want to have my back to the crowd because I don't feel like I've got eyes on things. I don't feel like I'll be safe. I don't feel like, do you know what I mean? Like someone could mistakenly identify me as someone else that owed them money for meth or whatever the fuck. And they could approach me and put a knife to my throat. And I've seen things like this. I've seen a lot worse things like that. I've been sitting there having lunch one day in LA and a kid came in on bath salts. It's that zombie drug, you know, and just the shit that just went from, and we were just sitting there having a nice lunch. And this shit can happen anywhere, man. Like here on the Sunshine Coast, it's all over the place. Two guys messed out their fucking brains. Like, as I said to you before, you don't pick the time and place. Do you know what I mean? It can happen anywhere, anytime, to anyone. And I'm not saying that to make you paranoid. I don't want to scare you out of your wits. I want to scare you into your wits, if anything. But it's to make you prepared, to make you realize like this shit should be a priority. You know what I mean? Because it comes back to, let's say you're preparing. Let's say you think that, okay, with stockage shortages or whatever you want to call it, chain supply issues or the volatility of the agricultural fucking industry or whatever, you know, there's so many things that have just become so volatile in terms of industry, right? You might say, okay, I'm going to start preparing. All right. Well, you start stocking food and you start stocking whatever it is, maybe ammunition, whatever.
Or growing your own vegetables.
Growing your own vegetables. And even your neighbors knowing about that, if you don't have a good relationship, if they're not an asset to you and you're not an asset to them, that will make you a target because really you're just prepping for the biggest guy on the block. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of the guys I know, they want to be the biggest, baddest motherfucker on the block. And okay, can you say you are? Because if you're not and you don't have that option to be high profile like I do in my area, I'm great with everyone and the people that live around me. We have a great relationship. We talk a lot. I know who the fuck I am or what the fuck I do. But we talk and we have a great rapport, right? The point being is that you got to play your cards. Do you know what I mean? If you're not that guy, then you've got to be an asset to people by way of being helpful, being useful, you know, being there for them. If they're going away, can you feed their dog? If you're going away, can they feed your dog? How much do you trust them? How reliable are they? Do you know their associates? Are they, you know, I used to live next door to a guy that was involved with some people that you don't want to be involved with, put it that way. And so I was like, okay, we keep the relationship to there, but I got to be aware of trajectory of conversations because if he finds out some of the things that I've got, that could make me an easy target. You know what I mean? So for that same reason, he doesn't have a clue what I do or who I am or any of that, but we have a great relationship. I can go into that later on maybe. But the point is that—
Doesn't even know your name.
Doesn't, exactly, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But I did a lot of this for work too. You know what I mean? I'd have to have not only a story and so-called cover for action or reason for being where I'm at and what I'm doing. You know what I mean? I've still got high vis, what do you call, fucking vest and hard hat and all these things to drive around looking like a tradie when I'm actually doing, you know, a recce on a place or going to a job. I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to wear a fucking suit. Do you know what I mean? I'm just, if I go high profile like that, I draw attention to myself. So for the average Joe, that's how you can make yourself an easy target, by drawing attention to yourself. One of the first and most simple things is presenting yourself as an easy target. And, you know, all crime is opportunistic. So if you're presenting the opportunity to someone who's looking for an easy target, then why wouldn't they approach you? Do you know what I mean? If I'm the bad guy, and we call this crim vision, we look for easy targets on the street and when we're out and wherever. If I'm the bad guy, I'm going to start looking for, all right, who's whatever, bag, phone, wallet, what can I swipe here? You know, I'm walking past a restaurant and I see all these people just really engaged in conversation or on their phones or whatever, and their bag's sitting there, and I see another phone or I see a wallet, I might just run past and grab it. Do you know what I mean? If I'm that bad guy, if all I'm looking for is, you know, $100 for my next fix or whatever it is, that's the opportunity. Sweet, I'm going to take it. Because even if I go spend the night in lockup or whatever, I've got a free meal and I've got a roof over my head. A lot of guys think like that because they're sick of the way things are going. They're sick of working. They've given up on life. Like, I know guys that would rather be in prison than at home with their kids and missus because of the fucking responsibility, the pressure of that. Do you know what I mean? So there are guys that are more than happy to go out and do whatever the fuck. They just do not have any of those social sort of barriers or moral ethics or whatever. It's just very different to ours, to yours and mine. So accepting that and understanding that, for starters, I think should make you sort of aware that, okay, if I present myself as an easy target, if I am creating the opportunity for someone even to approach me because I might be wearing a lot of jewelry or it might be whatever it is, right? Then I should at least be prepared to deal with it if and when that happens. So again, that's what I educate people a lot on, their communicative skills, getting resolve, getting solutions, being solution driven, and problem solving. So being able to improvise, adapt, and overcome challenges from preventing you from getting home, because that's what you're trying to do, get home safe, right? When we talk about balance of paranoia versus preparedness as well, I feel that, again, because of that habit, if I do these things and I have these things in place and I look at certain situations, be it an accident or whatever, let's say you saw something on Instagram or YouTube or in the news or whatever, a situation, and you think, fuck, well, I don't want to see myself in that situation, or I don't want to see my missus in that situation, or my little niece or nephew or whatever. So I better at least talk about this with family or show them and then go, what do you reckon? Oh, I think that's pretty fucked. Or what would you do there? Oh, even just that. And that can make them think, well, oh shit, I'm in my car right now. And oh, there are people around. Well, what if that guy approached me? And that's usually how it starts. Do you know what I mean? Simple situation. So if you ever see a situation, again, even in the news or in front of you or wherever it is, just put yourself in their shoes and think, okay, what would my priorities be here? Like, what am I trying to do? Get home safe as soon as possible. So my priority is to remove myself from the situation. What do I do? What do I need to do to make that happen? Well, there's obviously some steps that I need to take. I'm going to try and make my job easier and their job harder. So I'm going to wind my window up. I'm going to start drawing attention to myself by beeping the horn. I'm just relating it back to that simple situation because it's common. But there are a lot of other things I talk about, obviously, too, like we spoke about on the course and I talk about in my teachings that, you know, communication is a really, really good barrier, but also your body language, what you're putting out there, like not being inviting and not, you know, making yourself an easy target by showing that you're scared, by showing that you're intimidated. Because as I say, what does the cat do when the mouse runs? Fucking goes after it. That's that predator mentality. It's the same reason that when I'm training my dogs, which is every fucking day, if I throw something past them, they can't help themselves. They it's like blood in the water for a shark. They go after it. It's the same reason. If I throw a ball in front of my dogs, it taps into that primitive or predator side of their brain. They go, fucking sweet. They go after it and they can't help themselves. And I see scammers, I see hustlers, I see all sorts of guys on the street doing that to easy targets, guys who are coming out of clubs when they're drunk, you can tell they got money, you can tell by the way they're dressed and that, but they're fucked up. And someone will go and approach them with a sweet offer and then they start scamming them. You know, my missus and I were watching that movie Hustlers with Jennifer Lopez, and I was losing my mind like the whole time, because I've worked with women that have gone from stripping, prostituting to modeling to back to this and that. Like, they have no social sort of barrier as well and no shame. And that's great because we can have very open and honest conversations. I don't judge them. I've been working in that fucking nightlife scene for 20 years now, very actively for 10, and the last 10 more of an advisory sort of role. But I've seen and heard it all, man. Jesus. So nothing really, do you know what I mean? Nothing really shocks me. So if you can listen to people and they can be honest about that, if you can create that so-called safe space for them to speak without judgment, you hear a lot about what they actually do to set guys up and screw them over. Some of the fucking scams these chicks were running, man, that I know, that I've worked with and that I know on a personal level, on a business level, or whatever it is, I've met people in the film and television industry that used to do other things, and it's like, fuck, you know, people have got some crazy stories, man. And even people I've had to deal with who were the predator, I'm working with a victim and the other person was their stalker or their whatever. And yeah, it's just all shades of shit, man. It's never, it's never great. So, but what you can learn from it, if you can turn that into a positive and you can empower people by saying, hey, this is what's out there. Please be aware. Here's some simple tools to help you maintain your mindset, to help you create, develop, and maintain a functional skill set, positive habits, and a heightened sense of awareness. well, that's going to help you feel at ease, because that's what we need. A very basic human need is a sense of assurance, so that we know, okay, everything's sweet. You know, we need resolve. We've all got problems. We've all got shit we got to deal with. But once we get over it, we go, okay, sweet. So if I give you the answer to your questions, yeah.
I was going to say, when you have that, then that reflects in your body language, and that adds an extra thing. There's something beautiful about having that low profile undercover kind of body language and actual experience. Like, and it depends on the person. Some people like to be famous and be out on the front, and then some other, you know, it depends on the individual. Everyone's got different nature and astrological chart. And but I personally do love to like operate on that subtle, like kind of like people, when I was a teenager, they used to call me like Snoop Dogg. I was like that Snoopy kind of guy, like undercover. It's just, and then you feel more confident, because you have, you feel like, okay, although stuff is going a bit crazy on the relative, because I'm kind of keeping it low key, I can kind of have my vision. So yeah, it's a different vibe. And
I do the same thing where I live. In both places, I don't draw attention to myself. As I said, by way of not having my tats out, by way of conversations that I have, and I'm very relaxed. I'll give everyone a smile and a nod. I'm not like staring them down going, who the fuck's this? Or, unless they need it, for sure. Unless they need it. There's a youth crime spree happening that's been on the news, I don't know, probably four times this year in Queensland. And it's big in New South Wales, obviously, in Sydney too. Massive, you know, just the crime sprees. Melbourne's big too, you know. We have a group. We have various groups actually that come up from Brisbane. Groups of teenagers and guys, and come up on the train and then just come out. One of the local coppers was telling me it was up to 40 of them. And they're just hitting areas, like well-to-do areas. So that's the point. You know, people go, I live in a nice area. Why would I ever have this? I'm like, dude, you're a fucking easy target. That's why. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just because you live in a nice area, do you think that guys who are not as well-to-do as you are going to steal from people around them? You know what I mean? Guys who are in need, guys who are just over it, guys who are willing to do anything, they got nothing to lose. Do you think they're going to steal from people around them? Some of them are pretty motivated, man. Like, some of them work for other people too, you know, because they're hocking that shit off. And there's a whole industry behind that. And I've seen that in a lot of places, been to 35 countries now. I've seen it. It's the same. That element is the same.
On that case, we don't have too much time, but could you give a brief introduction, maybe overview into home security? Because that was a huge thing for me. I was kind of the things, you know, they used to say Bob Marley used to never lock his car. He was just in that full positive mindset. And I think he got, I don't know, broken into or something. But like, just like when I was there, like, okay, I'm upping the locking of, and I don't want to speak too much about what I personally do on this, but
for sure,
definitely up the home security. And particularly when we, you know, create our own home rather than renting, we'll definitely going to up that a big.
For sure. So, one of the big things for renters, let's talk about that, for example, and I'll just go back to the cybersecurity and tie that in for a second, because I meant to make that point before. Sorry for jumping around so much, but it is all relative. It is all connected, and it is all, I feel, equally as important. If you've got a Gmail account, for example, this is one of the really big reasons that you need to have multi-factor authentication on your phones, your devices and everything, and have multiple emails, multiple passwords, so that you break everything, meaning that if someone gains access to one thing, they don't have access to everything. That's the general concept. The reason I say that is, okay, let's think about this. Do you use the one email account for all of your correspondence? If that's the case, then you are going to have correspondence for maintenance. You're going to have correspondence from the real estate. You're going to have correspondence from whatever, right? And that's going to have your address. That's going to have all sorts of things. If you order high value assets or whatever they are, it could be guns, gun parts, you know, even gun cleaning equipment for my industry, that's a big thing. If you start ordering that, it's pretty obvious that you've got certain things at home, right? So it's not hard to put the pieces of the puzzle together, as I mentioned. The most important thing is InfoSec. So again, if you have something really valuable at home, it could be massive cash. It could be, as I said, guns, or it could be jewelry. It could be inheritance. It could be whatever, something that you don't want to lose. Okay. Do you want to tell everyone about it? Do your neighbors need to know about it? Do you know what I mean? Because I guarantee you, someone that lives around you will be connected to some little fucker that's willing to come and take that from you. So that's really important, because, you know, we could spend $100,000 or $200,000 or whatever. You know, one of the last security this is probably two or three gigs ago, but the last one of the big ones for a home security setup for a $5 million home, one of the cameras was $15,000. And just like the human element, you know, the weakest sort of element in any security system is the human element, but a piece of tech, a piece of hardware, a device can fail as well. You know, security cameras, for example, just on the topic real quick, change in season, meaning that the light is different. So when the sun is at different points in the sky, there will be different shadows around your property, around your place, whatever. So you do need to update. You do need to stay on top and check them regularly, do motion checks, do everything. You need to check that it serves your purpose. What are your cameras there for? Really, they're trying to give you a 360-degree view of your premises, be it home, resident, workplace, whatever. So if you hear something in the night, you can wake up and go wham, straight to your phone, to your notification, and go, sweet, I can see the front, I can see the side, I can see the back, I can see whatever you're concerned about. You should be able to see right around. Really, that will just give you information. It can help record, I guess, for when you're submitting evidence, but it's not going to deter anyone and certainly not going to stop anything. So it comes under the umbrella of deterrence for sure. There's a lot of deterrence. Light is a big one. A fence is another one. Dogs are probably the best one, but dogs can be baited. You know, I had a neighbor recently that had their dog baited, and I had a dog baited, I think, about 25 years ago. Someone crushed up glass in some mints and fed it to the dog. Next minute, there's a guy on the property. So, you know, the dog can't bark because it's cut up its whatever you call throat or whatever. That dog survived. So did the other one, that a neighbor that I had, that was very recently, actually. It cost them, I can't remember how much they said, nearly a grand to get that sorted. But more importantly, someone was coming for you. Do you know what I mean? That's what we say. If someone comes through the day, they're coming for your shit. If they come at night, they're coming for you. You know what I mean? And that might be different now because of the little pandy that we're having and supposed to be over. But anyway, a lot more people are working from home. So the opportunity will either be taken or created. Do you know what I mean? While you're out, while you're doing something, while you're away, or created, as in when you're most vulnerable, because that's what we look at in security, your vulnerabilities and how they can be exploited. But that brings you back to, if you walk outside someone's house, what can you see? Now, I walk my dogs a lot in different areas all the time, very different areas all the time. And I often look around and go, fucking hell, they're making that easy. The amount of people that leave their garage open, the amount of people that leave their fucking car doors open. I walk past so many cars every day that have their boot open, that have their bag, that have their phone, that have their so many things just there for the taking. So that's the biggest thing. People don't consider their privacy or security, especially people with money. People with a lot of resources are used to throwing money at problems and having them fixed and not having to think about them. And that's why that doco on Netflix, the Bling Ring, the real Bling Ring, which you should watch, talks about that. Those guys who are actually the criminals just go, it was so easy and it was fun and we got to be on the news, and they didn't care, man. That's the fucking point. They didn't care. So if you don't care and they don't care, well, how could you expect to not have your shit stolen? You know, so think about your privacy. Think about the deterrence. You should have lights, sensor lights. You can get them from anywhere. Bunnings, you can have battery operated ones. You can have hardwired ones. You can have solar ones. Cameras are a great thing. Dogs are a great thing, but they need to be trained. Otherwise, they're just a liability as well. Deterrence, you know, are you up on a hill? Are you in a cul-de-sac? Are you on a through street? You know, your car, is it a nice car? Is that inviting? You know, all of these things that you can be, again, making yourself either an easy target or setting up preventative measures in terms of at least having those deterrents. And then, yeah, thinking about the worst case scenario, like if and when something does happen, because I know that people want to think about this a lot too, because I could talk about deterrence and all that shit forever, but I know we're running out of time. What about the if and when factor? If and when it is going to happen, so if you do find yourself in that situation, what are you doing about it? Have you talked about that to your family? Like, what are they doing about it? Do you know what I mean? If you think you're going to go out there and fight, okay, are they on the phone to the police? Are they in a safe room? Are they in your panic room? Have they at least locked themselves in a toilet or a bathroom or wherever you've deemed is the safe room? Are they doing that? Are you trying to shorten the response time of law enforcement and or any assistance, medical attention, whatever you need? Are you giving them, as in the bad guys, an easy way in and out? Because if you make it hard for them, that's how they can get caught up, and that's how you can get yourself hurt. I've got a ton of cases I could talk about that where guys have actually accidentally killed people that they didn't mean to even hurt because they thought they weren't going to be home. The story I share about a Korean girl that was tied up and gagged in the closet, and they ended up, I think, stabbing her. And the guy that got done for it, who's still in jail now, he was just along for the ride. He didn't even know he was going to that house. He was just with his mates. So there's all sorts of situations that you can't even fathom, but let alone understand why those people might be there, because it could be by way of association. But if and when that does happen, what are you doing about it? You know, are you going out to try, you know, is your missus freaking out and she's going out and trying to help? You know what I mean? What if there's three of them with blades? What if they're these little fuckers that think they're untouchable by the law? Do you know what I mean? And do not care. Do not care at all. There's how many videos right now circulating and the news have put out there of the guys who have been, there's a group of 15-year-old girls that were stealing cars in Brisbane and going up and down the Gateway Bridge just doing fucking fishtails in expensive cars because they think, well, we're not going to jail. Who's going to do anything? So that's a liability too. You know what I mean? Like they don't have to be confident, capable young men. It could be anyone. But yeah, the point is, what are you doing about it in terms of your preventative measures? What are you doing about your countermeasures and your recovery measures? Try and learn from past experiences or even things that you've seen in the news, the media, whatever. And try and make yourself a harder target, I'd say should be your priority. Just in every sense, in your three circles, one of them being not just social and business, but personal. Because that's how a lot of the time, as they say, if anyone's ever attacked, sexually assaulted, all these sort of things, or scammed or whatever, it's usually by someone they know because they're closer to you. And if it's not a good scam artist or a con artist, con meaning confidence, they build confidence in them from you basically. It's about building that rapport. So if someone has your trust, they get you to let your guard down and then you're an easy target. And then there again, they're making that, creating that opportunity for themselves, you know, because that's what crime is. It's opportunistic. So yes. Don't ever create the opportunity for someone.
Yeah, cool. And like we're running out of time, but I would really recommend people to get on the Get Street Smart app and we'll share links to Luke's podcast and Luke's website where there's like so many resources. He's got a massive YouTube video, a YouTube channel, which became famous. Like I think it's a part of that kind of revolutionary thing of, hey guys, you haven't even considered this simple thing. So that's what made it really big. And
Yeah, very much the same.
I want to just say something where, like, just from my short amount of time that I've spent with you and heard from you, and also the fact that I see a lot of people every day, patients, and kind of read them and stuff. But I feel like you've come from this really intense, violent crime scene in Japan. Mm-hmm. And now I see you kind of moving more into this. More, even more preventative and more away from that energy. And I just have a question, like, for you to reflect on your own evolution of kind of moving out of that energy. You said you're doing less self-protection, used to say rich and famous, rich and dangerous. Can you share what it was in Japan, like, give us like intense deep, dark stuff you're doing compared to how you feel about that now and what direction you're moving into?
I think we're all a product of our environment, and I was bouncing a few years here before I went over there, and I've bounced in other places and done close protection in other places too. But in Japan, yeah, it's different because when you first get there, everything is kind of the opposite of your ration or logic. You know what I mean? I spoke Japanese before I went over there, but I didn't understand business relations and certain etiquette and whatever. I was friends with people and I had relations and whatever, but you know what I mean? It's different when you live there. It's very different going there for a tourist, you know, as a tourist, as it is to living there, paying taxes, working with, you know, government departments, all these sort of things. But before I did any of that, before I'd actually gotten the attention of, you know, people in power and all that sort of thing, and on the right side of the law, was working the nightlife because I was obviously a lot younger. This is the early 2000s, and I think I was attracted to that because I didn't want to be told what to do, for starters. I didn't want to take orders. I didn't want to live a 9-to-5. I'd tried that a couple of times in between, and it just wasn't working for me. But also, it was something I fell into very naturally. I think just I have that personality that I won't take shit from people. I won't start shit, but you know, I'm just not willing to take shit either, so I can get things done. And I think that people can see that, they can read it, and they can smell it. Other people who are of that sort of lifestyle as well, they can smell it. You know what I mean? They'll give you that respect up front, like, oh, fuck, you know, this isn't a guy to be fucked with. But I think because of that, I can have a very frank and honest conversation with him. In terms of the violence and everything, one thing that's different from the movies, for example, or, you know, one film that actually came out recently that my missus wanted to watch, I don't know why she wanted to watch all these fucking mafia movies, but she said, let's watch this, you know, because not many Japanese films on Netflix here in Australia. So, and there's not many English ones with Japanese subtitles, which does my head in because I have to sit there and translate everything. So we're trying to find things to watch. So anyway, she's got to this last movie. I said, all right, there's this one called A Family or something like that in English, I think it is. But anyway, the point is that it shows the demise of the nightlife. It shows how the law has changed everything. And that made things a lot harder for us in, I want to say, 2009, when they changed the law, the three-strike policy is what local law enforcement were talking to me about. And they said, if these guys come and kick your sign, or they intimidate, they shove you or whatever, that's one strike. If we have three strikes, we can go in, raid their fucking headquarters, arrest their boss, this and that. So we used to have guys that would come in and they were very flamboyant and they'd have sometimes a bit of tat showing. You can see they got all different sort of things. I don't want to be too specific, but you could tell. By the time this law came in, it made it really hard to tell who was who, because guys weren't getting inked up anymore. Guys were playing it down. Guys were trying to keep cool because, you know, mistakes would cost you sometimes before, be it a finger or certain other outcomes. And then it came back to money, and now people are actually getting fired. You know, if they go away and do time, they'll get the sack, so to speak. I hear about that a lot. Like, oh, so-and-so is actually out. So, you know, he's don't think that he's got anything to do with us or whatever. It's not that I want to maintain a relationship with anyone from former sort of engagements or work, but you have to. And if you're working in that scene, you need to have a relationship, and you need to know who's who. You need to know who you need to have a relationship and have good communication with, and have that respect with, have that sort of rapport with, I'd say, because if something needs to get done or there's a problem, which there's been a fuck ton of, which I talk about here on my show and my different programs and that, I give a lot of examples of situations and stories and incidences and things you have to navigate. It comes down to that respect. Do you know what I mean? They can see if you've got that basic human decency, that respect, and you're looking someone in the eye and you're shaking their hand and you're being honest and you're being just objectively, you know, frank with them, but not rude, not imposing your will, but not willing to take shit. You can really get somewhere, you know? So like I said, I'm still involved in that scene because I know the guys that run different clubs and pubs and bars and security teams. I mean, fucking three of my guys who I've got as trainers who I've certified have their own companies of massive guards. I got one guy on the Gold Coast who's ex-SF. He's got 150 guards, you know, like I end up working with a lot of these different guys. So I am very much still involved in the nightlife, and I have to be very aware of certain outcomes. You know what I mean? I don't want things to be misinterpreted. So that's why I speak in a very vague way sometimes. But yeah, the thing about that show was that it was very true that the demise of the nightlife, it's very hard. I know guys that have retired, like you'll go to a restaurant of some sort. I won't say which one specifically because that could be misinterpreted, but guys will have scars and tats and missing fingers and all this sort of thing. And people are like, holy fuck, but he's a really nice guy. So maybe he's not from that life anymore, but only certain people will go there. And there's all this, like, things are changing. But the point is that if you have that respect, you give that respect, you show that respect, you'll get it, because that is a currency in the nightlife. And sure, violence is too. If you create a problem or if you go looking for one, you'll sure as fuck find one. You know, and it will follow you. It will follow you and follow you, and it will follow your fucking everyone you know, and it will tarnish everything you got going on because it will bleed you dry. But as a former family member said, you know, they make the world go around. You know, that element in the nightlife, they make the world go around. I can't be any more specific than that, so I'm trying to avoid it. But issues or dramas, whatever you want to call it, usually come from a very simple, just bullshit, man, just bullshit. You know, that's how it can go in the nightlife for sure.
Yeah. On your toes for maximum respect. And when you have that high value of behavior and that quality, which is an important quality to have respect, that's your protection. That maintains the harmony. So it's
beautiful. Yeah, man.
All right, Luke. Well, it's been fun to you, like always.
Sure. Thank you, man.
I'm going to, yes, as I said, check out Get Street Smart podcast, Get Street Smart please, app. Yeah. And there's a lot of free stuff as well on the Get Street Smart app. And yeah. Anything else? I think it's cool to do in-person stuff. So are you, should they keep an eye out? Is there going to be any in-person workshops in Australia or elsewhere in the world?
Yeah, for sure. We're actually just talking about that. And the easiest way to look at what's going on is just look on my Instagram or whatever. We can put a link there maybe. But on the link there, I'll just put all the events and just links to everything. Cool. So you can find everything from that, or the link in this description. Sweet. Maybe we'll put some stuff there. But
we'll add it all. Cool, man. Or anything else you wanna leave the audience with for?
Have a listen, because I think it will positively influence you in terms of how to approach this stuff. Do you know what I mean? Objectively. And there's a lot about crime and violence in Japan, life and all that sort of thing. Which, if you want to talk about that another time, I'm more than happy to. Life in Japan and all that sort of stuff, because I think you mentioned that before we start. And I probably didn't get onto it too much, sorry, but that's cool.
Good.
But yeah, man, I'd love to talk to you about what you do as well, because it's very interesting to see another Aussie that's gone out and gotten that wealth of that knowledge, that information, that skill set that you have, that you didn't just go and, you know, go to TAFE or whatever, which is great for people to go and do that, don't get me wrong, but I can see that you travel and you're very, very much immersed in what you do. And it's a lot of the things you've said and were saying even at the start, we say the exact same thing, both in this, in be it Tai Chi or Buddhism or whatever else. I was like, holy shit, that's the same quote, you know, like, that's really cool. So yeah, man.
Yeah, for sure.
That'd be great.
All right.
But yeah, man, thank you for having me. It's been awesome. And yeah, if you have any questions about any of that stuff, just let me know. But yeah.
Sweet.
Cool.
So I hope you enjoyed that. If you want to check out Luke's work, the way that I would recommend you checking out is probably follow him on social media, more than social media, perhaps a newsletter, and you'll get informed about when he's doing these upcoming camps, which I did with Luke, the survival camps, not only survival of living in the bush to be able to eat your own food, but what Luke brought to the table was, you know, skills of whether it's martial arts skills, but also how to hide, how to untrack. We did anti-tracking, all these kind of cool things. So yeah, it's fun. And you can, of course, check out the Get Street Smart app. Luke's got his own podcast where there's pretty cool stories. Just people with fascinating stories. Luke can just go on about all these stories. We could keep talking. We had to delete a whole lot of stuff from this podcast because, as you can tell by Luke's, you know, he doesn't want people to know so much about different things. And it just came out because we were so comfortable in our conversation. But you hear these amazing stories, especially while on camp with Luke or with him in person, where he, you know, all phones away from the area, he'll tell some pretty amazing stories about his time in the nightlife in Japan, about his time with governments and the rich and famous and the rich and dangerous. So let me know what you think. Leave a comment. I hope you took that well. If you listened to the end, congratulations. Much love.